Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the January 19th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. First order of business tonight is the public hearing on a proposed local law number one. I'll read the announcement. The Tompkins County Legislature will hold a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. concerning proposed local law of 2016, a local law amending Local Law 4 of 1989, the Tompkins County Hotel Room Occupancy Tax Law, amending the definition of a hotel in Section 150-9 of the Tompkins County Code. Is there anyone who would like to speak with respect to the local law? If so, please step to the microphone. The hordes are rushing up here, so. Not hearing anybody who would like to speak to the local law, I'm going to close the public hearing. And I wondered if folks would please stand with me to pledge allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. Stein?
Present.
Mr. Burbank?
Present.
Ms. Chalk?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
14 members present?
We're all here and we have quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
Joe, is Jim Baker here tonight?
He is.
I guess I'm not seeing him. But if he's here, that's great. I'd like to say a few nice things about someone's helped us out here, Jim Baker, who's been our interim assigned council administrator. I wonder if we could get Jim to come up. There he is, in the back corner. Can we get you to go to the podium, Jim, please? Good, how are you? This is a county that takes great pride in the quality of our assigned council program. It's recognized across the state as an example of how an indigent defense program should be run. Maintaining the high standard of quality requires a great staff, and we have an extraordinary coordinator in Julia Hughes. It also takes skilled and dedicated attorneys, defense attorneys. Fortunately, we have an exceptional panel of lawyers. But it also takes a leader, a supervising attorney, who can provide executive management and strategic vision of the program. When our previous leader, Wes McDermott, passed away last fall, the assigned council program lost a great leader. When the ABIR, the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, came together to talk about how to recover from that loss, a consensus immediately emerged that one local attorney, Jim Baker, had the personality and the legal and organizational skills we needed to keep the program moving forward. With little hesitation, Jim accepted our invitation to serve as the interim supervising attorney. The preface interim didn't deter Jim from providing energetic, engaged, and constructive leadership to the assigned counsel staff and attorneys. In addition to the ordinary work of the office, Jim also led negotiations with Schuyler County that will soon result in an unprecedented two-county shared service agreement that will have Tompkins County assigned counsel program provide legal representation to certain indigent defendants in Schuyler County. Jim, we want you to know that the county is deeply appreciative and grateful for the service you provided the community, and especially to those who rely on our assigned counsel office for quality legal representation. And on behalf of our legislature, I want to present you this certificate of appreciation for your exceptional contributions to the community while serving as our interim supervising attorney.
Wes McDermott had a lot to do with putting that together, but keeping that running during the 3 months that I was interim supervisor, really all the credit for that goes to Julia Hughes, Mary King, and Melissa Hall Schwartz, the people that actually run the office. They came to me to stamp out a brush fire now and then, but they'd already located where the fire was and just how small it was. So my job was pretty easy thanks to the help I had. I was just glad to be able to help out in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Wondered if we could ask legislator Rich John to come on up. I think he has a presentation he'd like to make tonight.
Thank you, Mike. If I could ask Devin DeMarco and his chief, Jason Fulton, from the Trumansburg Fire Department to come up. I'm going to let Chief Fulton talk a little bit about the details. Come on over here, Devin. This is in connection with the county has a Distinguished Youth Award, and I've been fortunate enough to know Devin for many years as a hockey coach, and in that process I met his parents, Frank and Sheila, and have had just a great time coaching this young man who's a very good hockey goalie, by the way. But that's not why he's here tonight. He's a fine student at Trumansburg High School, but also he has really stepped up for his community as a volunteer firefighter. And if I could introduce Jason Fulton.
Good evening. Devin came to us as a junior firefighter when he turned 16. We have that program in Trumansburg, and then when you become 18, you get to be a full-fledged actual firefighter. During that time, though, from 16 to 18, you can take state classes, get ready for when you become 18, you're all ready to go. And Devin's gone above and beyond to do that. He started right in when he became when he joined me at 16 and got everything he needed. So when he became 18, he became an interior firefighter. And he's still going and doing all the technical rescue-type classes as well, like the swift water rescue, rope rescue, and all that. So every fire department in Tompkins County probably wishes they had three or four of Devin. We're lucky to have Devin, and we can't be more proud of Devin for what he's done for us and for winning this award.
Invite the family up. Maybe they'd like to have pictures.
Come on up.
Purity ice cream T-shirt and a gift card.
The Distinguished Youth Award. Can you read a little bit? Say who is the sponsors for that? Rich, please.
Yes. I will just read it off. 2016 January Distinguished Youth Award. An award that emphasizes a truly inspirational and exceptional individual, Devin DeMarco, brought to you in part by the following: Bangs Ambulance, Tompkins County Legislature, Specialty Trophy and Awards of Dryden, New York, Purity Ice Cream, and the Cuga Radio Group. I would add that Devin is about to go off to, is it ice rescue?
Yeah.
Good time of year for it.
We will be having an executive session tonight to discuss labor negotiations and litigation. I think we'll go to public privilege of the floor. This is the opportunity of the public to speak to us on any topic for up to three minutes. We ask that anyone who would like to speak, please sign one of the blue cards in the back of the room and hand it forward. In signing the card, you're agreeing to the rules. You're agreeing not to the three-minute time limit. We have a clock over here that will count down the 3 minutes when you start talking. At the end, there will be an audible ring like a telephone, and we ask if you haven't concluded by that time to please finish what you're saying. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So I have three cards at this point. If there's anyone else that wants to speak, please go ahead and sign them and pass them up. I have Joe Wilson. Please state your name and your municipality.
Good evening. My name is...
Okay.
I'm Joe Wilson. I'm from Dryden. I'm here to talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, is about the future, a future that many of us will not see. That makes the TPP more about our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and the kind of world we give them to live in after we're gone. Since we cannot see the future but are responsible for what we now put in place, we must use our best judgment, one based on history, facts that we do know, and our informed intuition. We know that the TPP is like NAFTA, only more so. We know the history of NAFTA is job cuts, stagnant wages, reduced worker safety, runaway manufacturing, and environmental degradation. We know that negotiations for the TPP were carried on in secret, with no input from informed representatives of the general public, labor, or the environment, to name just a few who were excluded. We know the negotiators took direction from a government bought and paid for under Citizens United. We know that the only input on the draft terms came directly from representatives of the faceless, soulless, responsibility-dodging, profit-at-all-costs multinational corporations who will be TPP's primary beneficiaries. Based on this, my informed intuition tells me that the kind of future the TPP will likely create for our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren is one where jobs are scarce, a living wage hard to come by, and an environment characterized by industrial wastelands. Given this, I ask each of you to vote for a resolution condemning the process by which the TPP was created and opposing its enactment. Thank you.
Thank you. Victor Tiffany?
Victor Tiffany from Danby. I'd like to speak on behalf of the Kiefer version of the resolution to Congress on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I'd like to ask you to imagine being in a different time and a different space. Close your eyes if you need to. And imagine being in the summer of 1787. You're in the hot Pennsylvania State House. You're among other delegates hammering together a new order for a new nation. And one of the delegates rises, takes to the floor and addresses the assembly, arguing that the Virginia plan has no capacity for large transnational corporations like the East India Company to self-regulate. That delegate, if he wasn't laughed out of the hall, would have been thrown out by any other delegate who was actually participating in the Boston Tea Party. The notion that transnational corporations should regulate themselves would have been considered absurd to the founders. And yet, that's what the Trans-Pacific Partnership is. As previous speaker said, it was framed by corporate lawyers and their representatives. Congress had no role, and that's important, because what the framers gave us is legible, readable, understandable by we the people. And it's clear, Congress shall regulate commerce with other nations. It's unambiguous, and Congress had no role. So, how might the executive have the authority to pass or negotiate a 5,500-page document under the treaty provision? Meaning, again, according to the Constitution, it should go before the Senate for two-thirds ratification. But that's not happening. It's mind-boggling to me how anyone would oppose this. Peter said in committee last week that Obama wouldn't do anything against the Constitution. So let me remind him, we've been bombing Syria and the Islamic State for nearly a year with no aggression authority, which he asked for again in the State of the Union address. It hasn't stopped him. In violation of both U.S. law and the U.S. Constitution, he still bombs away in Syria. So I asked Peter, who should you be loyal to? A president, right or wrong, or your constituents? Because I'm going to make sure your constituents know if you vote against both of these resolutions tonight. I will take the time to print out and go door to door with leaflets if I need to. Support the Kiefer resolution. Thank you.
Sherry Korthus, please.
I'm sorry. I'm Sherry Cortais from Ithaca, and I left my notes, so I'm going to just read from this sort of. The TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, I'm here speaking for the Kiefer resolution also, because the Trans-Pacific Partnership is just a bad deal for our country. It has been negotiated in unprecedented secrecy, and for the first time, texts of international agreements have been classified so that members of Congress don't even have access, and they can't even discuss what they've read. And they're more than trade agreements. The portions that have been leaked show that they will affect everything that we care about, from food we eat to the jobs we have and the health of the planet. And the legislation could last 7 years, so they can add more trade deals into it, like with South Korea that we just did recently. But what this does is it cedes our power to write the future of our planet. This is, you know, we live here. So NAFTA came into force in 94, and from Reuters, nearly 5 million U.S. manufacturing jobs, one in four, have been lost since NAFTA in previous post-NAFTA expansion deals. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that 3 out of 5 displaced workers who found a job are earning less money, and one-third took a pay cut of 20% or more. So, you know, only beneficiaries of the TPP are transnational corporations with desire to move capital and businesses across borders without regulations. And, you know, the big our sovereignty is a huge deal. And so under these agreements, corporate sovereignty will increase while sovereignty of governments shrinks and people lose their ability to influence public policy. The corporate trade agreements will create a series of laws designed to aid corporate profits over the health, safety, income, and well-being of most people and further undermine the already at-risk ecology of the planet. National and local laws will be required to be rewritten. And I'm going to make that local, because we're local. This is local here. And, you know, they'll rule over us. And this is just not how the Constitution was written. It's you might as well take the Constitution and shred it if this passes, because you're going to have multinational corporations. They're going to be able to sue New York State because we banned fracking. But if Vietnam, who joins in this partnership, says, well, we want natural gas for our country, and we want to drill in New York, so we're going to sue you for lost profits, then we as taxpayers are going to have to pay for those lost profits. And that's just, and then it won't be any reason for me to come speak to you guys on Tuesday nights anymore, because we won't have any power. Our power will have been stripped. So really look into the issue and read. I'd love to see this resolution passed tonight to make the statement. You know, it makes a statement. It's a beautiful place to live, and I just love this city and would love to see it remain just wonderful. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Carl. Is it Fitz Lee?
Fitzke, yeah.
Fitzke, sorry.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm Carl Fitzke. I live in the town of Ithaca. And I'm going to keep it real short. The previous three speakers said just about everything I'd want to say, but it's just surreal to me. I'll just add a personal note. It's just surreal to me to think something like the Trans-Pacific Partnership's been put together in secret, now more public, but I guess I just focus on the sovereignty issue and how I just can't imagine the country where an agreement like this is passed and local governments, state and local governments, are made to, are put under the threat of some court of unelected people, or they're not even people. Again, I'm a big foe of corporate personhood, and this would be a court of unelected legal entities telling actual human beings and citizens how their lives should be ruled, and it just flies in the face of common sense and the whole idea of the United States of America as I understand it. Thank you for your time, and thank you to Mr. Burbank and Ms. Kiefer for their work on these resolutions. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm not seeing a municipal official out there, am I? Ah, Deborah Cipolla Dennis from the town of Dryden, newly elected member of the town board out there. Deborah, welcome, and take a few minutes and tell us about Dryden.
Okay. There's also a couple of people from the Common Council here. Okay, Deborah Cipolla Dennis from Dryden, as Mike said. Thank you, Mike. And I came here tonight because I've come to meetings so much in the past, and I've always heard Mike say, are there any public officials here wanting to speak? And there haven't been, and so I felt bad about that. So I just wanted to – I am going to try to come to these meetings at least once a month and check in, and I'll – keep you guys up to date on what's happening in Dryden. We do have a new town supervisor, Jason Leifer, and we've also appointed Dan Lamb to the board. He's been appointed in the seat that that Jason vacated, and Dan is also our deputy supervisor. So we have a lot of committees and other things, and I'll put it into the notes. I won't go through it here because it's kind of boring. Just to let you know, the TCOG representative is Linda Levine, and Jason Leifer is the representative. Linda Levine is the alternate. For the Health Insurance Consortium, I am the representative, and Jen Case, our bookkeeper, will be the alternate. For the Transportation Council, Ray Berger, our planner, is a representative with Jason Leifer as the alternate. And the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility representative is Linda Levine with Marianne Sumner, graciously volunteering to continue to work with us on that because she had so much knowledge about that. Other things that we're going to be working on. We're considering a resolution to purchase the property at Pinckney Road. I think you guys have talked about that, and we really appreciate the financial support that the county has offered towards us. We're also looking at some zoning law changes to make it easier for developers and landowners to understand what their responsibilities are and to simplify and clarify the site plan review and the special use permit, hoping that that will help with some economic development activities. We're looking to modify our renewable energy law to encourage and facilitate more renewable energy in solar and wind. And we're continuing to work on expanding our biking and hiking trails. And I wanted to just do a shout out to Leslin. I went to the MLK breakfast at GIAC, and it was wonderful. Thank you so much for your wonderful words and organizing and all your work there. And it was great to see so many public officials there and representatives, and sat with Martha. That was great. And then I'll just weigh in really quickly on the TPP. I really appreciate the legislature picking this up and working on this, and I think it is an important issue, and I think making a statement against the TPP is a really great idea, so I hope you all support it. Thanks.
Thank you, Deborah. Nice to have you as the first municipal official to speak in 2016, and makes me especially proud since I'm from Dryden as well.
Mike?
Yeah, George McGonigal and Duxon.
From the city.
Is George here? George, would you like to speak?
And Duxon.
Take some, please, please. Having two is super.
Greetings. My name is George McGonigal. I represent the First Ward in the City of Ithaca's Common Council. And this is my new colleague, Duxon Nguyen, who represents the Second Ward. And we're sharing liaison duties with Tompkins County Legislature.
So we don't have much report right now, but we'd like to do better about, you know, coming to these meetings and reporting back what's going on in the city. And then I'm also going to be joining the TCAD board. I'm also on the Planning and Economic Development Board, and we're going over CTAP right now, which obviously is a big issue. So that's about it. More next month.
Well, thank you both for coming tonight. This is just terrific. Now we've got three people on. I can't remember that we've had three before. We're going to proceed, unless there's somebody else I've missed out there, from municipal officials, which would be all right. I would like to move to privilege the floor for our members of the legislature. I see Martha's hand up. I see Anna, and Eric. I think Carol was next, and then Anna.
Yeah, I usually have questions, and for Duxon, I was appreciated getting to the committee meeting for the planning committee last week of the city, and I was wondering, I had to leave before you discussed the CTAP, that's the community investment incentive tax abatement program. Is that the initials? Okay. For the IDA, so that's under discussions. I was wondering if you wanted to just say a couple words about what the discussion was like at the committee and where it's going to go next.
So we've got a lot of comments, so much so that we've decided to continue discussion into the next month. We did, however, pass on to council one portion of the proposed changes, a piece that requires that developers get at least one bid from a local contractor and start reporting where their employees live and their wages. So we passed it on to full council, and so we'll have to vote on it next month. But the reason why we passed on that piece is most of us felt like it was a piece that was missing from the basic CTAP application, and that without this data, we've been kind of blind as to the availability of local labor, the actual cost of bids, and the existing number of local workers. So in case this discussion ends up taking months, and it may, because it is a complex issue, we didn't want to miss out on that potential, having that information as applications come in.
Thanks very much.
So I do encourage people to read up on the proposal, and please contact members of that committee.
Carol.
I actually raised my hand first for the same purpose and got my question answered. Should we ask first if there are other questions for the municipal officials? Because I have a privilege of the floor comment as well.
If anyone else has questions for municipal officials, they're welcome to ask them. Not seen any.
If not, thank you to whoever raised the information about the GIEC session yesterday. And if anybody hasn't read the article in the Ithaca Journal today about the speaker there, do so. And boy, I'm gonna botch his name, Leslin.
Russell Rickford was the speaker on Monday.
A visiting scholar faculty at scholar at Cornell. And
proud to say he's from Guyana. Woo, woo. My home.
Yes, I noticed that as well. In essence, his message, as portrayed in the Ithaca Journal, was that we do an injustice to Martin Luther King to water down his message, which in fact included much more than is usually portrayed about social, economic justice, inequality issues, and the effect of the kinds of things that we're talking about with the TPP, the effect of allowing big corporate interests to undermine our national policy. and local policy. So read that article. If you've never listened to his Riverside Church speech from before he died, do so. It's quite a speech. Other than that, I was going to talk a little bit about I happened to have a meeting week before last in the conference room at the assessment department. It had nothing to do with assessment, but they have a lovely conference room that is available, not at tax time. And when they've got the records spread out, it's not. But on my way out, I often notice this great poster they have up, which is an enlargement of a Monopoly piece. It's the card for Park Place or Broadway, or Broad Street, whatever it is. And so I don't usually focus on something else that's on the wall there. And this time I noticed on my way out this huge thermometer. One, you know, of the type that's used by the United Way and others to track their fundraising campaigns. But this thermometer went up the whole wall and then had another section, an extension next to it. And I thought, oh, what is that? And it turns out that what it is something that tracks donations that the staff of the assessment department voluntarily make in an arrangement that's quite interesting. And I just wanted to share it because it was so striking. On Fridays, the deal is they have a casual Friday. We don't have a dress code at the county, but you can wear jeans, which people don't usually do, or even if you don't dress up. It's your choice. Everybody puts, or whoever wants to, puts a dollar into a kitty. And when the kitty reaches $50, they have a drawing of somebody's name, and the person whose name is drawn gets to pick who's going to get the $50, what nonprofit will get the $50. And over the years, it's been going on quite a number of years, they have now reached a total of $2,350. You know, our employees with, you know, over time, managing to give that kind of money to a whole series of institutions and organizations, most of them local, not all of them. And some of the same names come up again. And every once in a while, they put these little dots on this chart tracking how much they've given. And I wrote to Jay about it and found out more details. It's quite interesting. And they, in addition, this office voluntarily has kitchen competitions. People bring in food and they invite a guest speaker, so you can if you hit them right, you can join them. And sometimes it's breakfast competition, lunch, sometimes late in the day. And then to get you there on Friday mornings at 8:15 on Friday mornings, lest you be late for your casual Friday, they play putt-putt golf. And Jay himself brings in it's a very small prize, and there's a drawing for it where if you win the putt-putt game, you get this very small prize. So these are just great, what great creative ideas and commitment on the part of our staff who put so many hours in to also, you know, give to each other and give to those in our community. So I just wanted to recognize Jay. I'm sorry he's not here, but I was going to forget about it if I waited until he actually had business here again.
So. We have Anna next, then Will, then Mike.
And I'll try and keep it short. I wanted to just a couple quick things. I first wanted to thank the municipal officials for coming. I really, really appreciate it. I think that it's important for us to collaborate across government groups, and so if we are able to attend each other's meetings, we'll definitely go far to that goal. So thank you so much. And I wanted to also talk briefly and appreciate the Tompkins County Workers Center tomorrow, or yesterday, non-linear time in my brain right now, They put on an event, a rally, to have people standing outside of fast food restaurants to promote education on the living wage. As many people know, fast food groups have started the rollout, or the state has started the rollout for fast food industry to work towards the $15 minimum. So right now they're at $9.75, for example. So it was to educate the workers and to educate the community. And even though it was utterly freezing, Will Burbank and I had the privilege of standing outside of Moe's and had a ton of people honking and appreciating. And I think that we need to do more of that. We need to educate the entire community that this opportunity is out there, and we can't stop there. This does need to be a rollout that continues beyond the fast food industry. So I wanted to thank them. And the last thing I wanted to say really quickly, this morning I did a tour of the Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility. And I just want to encourage everyone here, public as well, anybody who's listening, to tour the facility. They have public tours all the time. 10% of wastewater treatment facilities in the country have the type of technology that we currently have in the wastewater treatment facility, which are biodigesters to allow for production of energy at the facility to reduce the dependence on natural gas. And they are working up to potentially being able to produce a majority, if not all, of their energy needs. That is their goal, and that is an amazing, amazing goal. So they're very enthusiastic. They do offer the public tours, and I encourage everyone who is interested to educate themselves and see what we have here, the gift that we have here.
Thank you, Anna. Will Burbank?
Thank you, Mike.
Next.
Just speaking about the same thing that Anna did in terms of the vigil that would happen yesterday, it was extraordinary in the sense that on one of the most brutally cold days in Ithaca, you had citizens coming out and standing in very extreme situations to speak to social equity. And as Anna said, the public going by, mostly they ignored us, but we got a lot of very positive honks. And one of the instructions from the Worker Center was to go in and talk with the people inside the establishments. And I have to say, I was a little nervous about that. I anticipated there would be hostility or whatever, but in fact, the workers were delighted, and managers very happy to have the support. As you know, it's not easy surviving in Ithaca and living on a low wage, and a lot of people working at our fast food places literally are driving in from many, many miles away because they simply can't afford to live here. And so yesterday there was a group of people trying to do something about it, and I want to thank them all. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Mike Sigler.
I just wanted to start off. I mean, earlier this month, I got a call from Joe at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm, you know, as I'm trying to figure out how much money he needs for bail, I picked the phone up, and he said, we have this situation down at the mine, at Cargo Mine, and I really wanted to thank everybody that was involved with the rescue of those 17 guys. I mean, I was down there at 6 o'clock, and everybody was doing, like, what they were supposed to be doing, and they got those guys out basically as quickly as they could. They were able to go out and find a crane that can go down that deep. I mean, it was really everything I thought was just so well put together. And just want to thank the fire department, the sheriff's office, you know, our own people in emergency services, the crane operators, I mean, the guys that were stuck in the mine and their families that were held up at the church there. And even the local, you know, merchants like Crossroads Restaurant, and I'm definitely going to forget somebody here, so I'm sorry about that, but, you know, they were out cooking food and getting food to the families and things like that. It was certainly a community effort there. So, again, I just want to thank everybody that was involved, and I apologize for forgetting anybody at all, but it was really just a great effort. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Leslin McBean Claiborne.
Thank you very much, Mike, for sharing that and thanking those folks. I, too, want to echo thanks. But I also want to point out something that I found very, very interesting, and that's our media and media coverage. I like the media, but the media sometimes is like law enforcement. People say you want them to come when you call them. You don't want them to come when you don't call them. But it's interesting that there was a lot of media coverage when the rescue operation was happening, when we were getting people out. But soon after that, even, and I'm talking national, I mean, I turned on Channel 9, Good Morning America, and they were talking about this, and MSNBC and everybody else was talking about it. But post the operation and everybody out safely, I don't recall as much media coverage, and it occurred to me that what an opportunity wasted for the kind of training that our emergency services workers go through to be able to do what they did. Now, if it were one of the situations where people had died and we didn't get somebody out, we will probably still be hearing about it in the news. But it's an opportunity to really use to, one, encourage perhaps some younger people to think about this, careers. Guy of the fire department, I'm going to butcher Guy's last name, so I'm not even going to try to say it.
Ben Scott.
Go ahead. Y'all can say it out loud for me. I know I'm going to butcher it. But Guy and I had this conversation because both of us and others have participated in disaster relief and emergency management training in Emmitsburg in PA. And he was sharing just how much of that training and experience came into play to be able to do what they did that morning. But we don't talk about that sort of stuff in the news. We just thought that the media coverage for it just sort of stopped as long as everybody was safe. But it's an opportunity I want to encourage people, and especially those from the media here, locally, et cetera, to take, to continue to really educate about what does it really take to do this work? You know, because there might be someone who may get a different understanding or some people who might get a different understanding and might be encouraged to go into that field. So I just wanted to point that out in addition to saying thank you. And I also particularly wanted to mention the state diner on Martin Luther King Jr. Street here in Ithaca that was one of the restaurants that came up and said, we want to feed our emergency services worker for the work that they did. So kudos to everyone who participated, who helped, to the folks from Auburn who showed up with their crane, et cetera, to say, you know, it was really a collaborative effort. And don't lose the opportunity to get people understanding what it takes and what courage and great career opportunity it could be.
Thank you. Anyone else? I would just echo what Mike and Leslin have said. Wonderful effort to help those 17 miners get out of there safely. I was there as well, Leslin, and I know the firemen were ready to go down if they needed to rappel down 900 feet to save those men if they necessary. We're glad that they didn't have to do that. And as far as the media thing is concerned, we really have to thank our public information director, Marsha Lynch, and her team that came with that and did a wonderful job managing the news, getting the press releases out, and certainly our county administrator, who was the point of contact there at the same time. So thanks to everybody who worked on that. I guess it's my turn to speak a little bit tonight about committees and where we're heading a little bit for 2016. As some prepared remarks I'd like to read. Now in its 199th year, Tompkins County sets a high bar as a leader among its county peers for policies and programs that are intelligent, innovative, compassionate, and essential for its residents and for the people who find employment here. As we have rocketed into the 21st century, we are working purposefully to improve our local economy and in partnership with our city, towns, and villages, striving to help make people's lives a little better. The work is incomplete. Too many people still struggle with the high cost of living, Housing of all kinds is in short supply, and even so-called affordable housing may be too expensive for many. As we have spent considerable effort over the last 15 years to help revitalize Ithaca, our county seat, we have not been so vigilant about our assisting of our rural towns and villages to achieve their significant potential for economic development. While we should in no way diminish our support for our city, it's time that we begin to pay more attention to the outlying areas. 2016 will be a challenging year. While the governor and the state legislature propose spending millions of dollars of their own of money for their own new pet projects, the tax cap imposed by them on local governments, coupled with the ever-present high cost of state-mandated programs, continues a multi-year thrust against genuine home rule for local governments, while feeding a top-down, personality-driven autocracy at the state level. Already, some of our own local state legislators are trumpeting an effort to extend the tax cap. Little wonder about that when there is no burden on them, but as a shift of the costs instead to counties and other municipalities. The truth is that if New York State wants to reduce real property taxes, then it needs to take over all of the cost of its own mandated programs like Medicaid. Amid all of that, the county's Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee will have its work cut out for it. I've asked legislator Jim Dennis to continue his role as chair. Returning to that committee will be Michael Sigler as vice chair and experienced members Leslie McBean Claiborne, Glenn Morey, and Peter Stein. Personnel work to be done will have increased focus, including performance reviews for the employees who report directly to the legislature. In addition, the committee will be taking on oversight of the tourism program. Population demographics of Tompkins County are changing. Our community is diverse and welcoming, and we must continue to reflect that within our own county workforce. The Workforce Climate Survey conducted and presented last year provides a starting point for review of our policies and commencement of strategies to improve the feeling of inclusiveness for all of our employees. To lead our effort, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee will continue this year. Leslie McBean Claiborne will again chair that committee, which also includes serving members of community and staff. A few years ago, because of workload and the need to provide essential focus, we created a separate Economic Development Committee and a separate Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, both of which have done good and important work. For 2016, those committees will be joined again as one. In a first in recent memory, the membership of this new Planning, Economic Development, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, or whatever shortened version of that name we come up with, will include seven members, with that being reflective not only of the important work of that committee, but the level of interest of legislators in the work it will do. With an eye towards climate instability, Tompkins County is a statewide leader in encouraging change in the way we produce and deliver energy. We are also a bright spot upstate for economic development, and we need to encourage such growth in manufacturing, agriculture, and other sectors that will provide good-paying jobs for residents. Coupled with that, we have been able to provide housing. Coupled with that, we have to be able to provide housing from apartments to individual family homes and child care to make finding employment and family living here a desirable choice. This new committee will be chaired by legislator Martha Robertson with Dooley Kiefer as vice chair, the two chairs of the previous two committees, and legislators Carol Chalk, Anna Kellis, James Dennis, David McKenna, and Mike Sigler as the other members of the committee. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee does vital work. It oversees highway and bridge projects and equipment that is needed to maintain them. The multiple county buildings and other facilities, along with our enterprise programs in solid waste and airport, require ongoing attention. For 2016, the committee will oversee the completion of the capital projects for renovation of the Mental Health Services Building and for program renovations for the Tompkins County Public Library. This year, I've asked David McKenna to return to that committee as its chair. Additionally, Dan Klein will serve as vice chair, and legislators Anna Kellis, Glenn Morey, and Mike Sigler will round out that group. The Government Operations Committee will continue under the leadership of Dan Klein as chair. Will Burbank will be the vice chair of that committee, with legislators Carol Chock, Richard John, and Dooley Kiefer as the remaining members. That committee administers departments including county administration, assessment, board of elections, and public information, to name a few. We are still looking to assist in providing needed broadband service for parts of our county. The subcommittee on broadband will continue with David McKenna as its chair. Additionally, I will be asking the Government Operations Committee to consider creating a subcommittee that would include community members to review the human rights program. Events in 2015 pointed to a need to look at the relationship between the Human Rights Commission and the Human Rights Office and to re-explore the delivery of the vital services that it provides to the people of our county through this historic program. Leslin McBean Claiborne will chair the Health and Human Services Committee this year. That committee has charge of those departments which matter so much to the vulnerable of our population, employ the majority of our employees, and administer the greatest part of the county budget. Carol Chock will serve as vice chair, with legislators Will Burbank, Anna Kellis, and Martha Robertson. Among other things, that committee will pay attention to the recently approved combination of administration of the county mental health department and the county health department. The public safety committee will have important work this year as well. The sheriff's office reports to it, as does the probation department, the district attorney, and assigned counsel program. Among other things, the committee will look at new county efforts to provide reentry services for jail prisoners back into our community with a goal of helping to reduce recidivism. After the 2015 incident at Hornbrook Road, Tompkins County and our Sheriff's Department continues its interest in further exploring how such incidents can best be handled. With federal assistance, a review of the incident will commence this year. A proposed study of police service consolidation will also be pursued. Legislator Peter Stein will chair the committee this year. Martha Robertson will be the vice chair, and the other members will be legislators Will Burbank, James Dennis, and Richard John. The Charter Review Committee will be looking to complete its work this year and bring forth proposed amendments to the full legislature. The committee will have the same membership as last year, but I've asked legislator Dooley Kiefer to chair the committee with Peter Stein as vice chair. Returning members are legislators Dan Klein and me. While most of the work of the Special Old Library Committee is complete, the committee will continue and meet on an as-needed basis for the finalization of the sale of the property. I will continue as the chair of that committee, and the other same members will continue with Leslin McBean Claiborne as vice chair and legislators Dooley Kiefer and Mike Sigler also serving. Much is happening at the federal and state level with respect to transportation. A multi-billion dollar federal highway bill and proposals by Governor Cuomo for increased funding for infrastructure means we at the local level must be thinking about our own needs and poised to advocate for and secure funding for our airport, our mass transit system, and our highway system. This year, I have proposed a special transportation committee to look at these issues. The purpose of the special committee is not to supplant the work of the program committees overseeing these systems, but rather to take another look at what changes might be made and new directions taken in light of federal and state actions. I will be chairing this special committee with Glenn Morey as vice chair and legislators Jim Dennis, David McKenna, and Peter Stein as members. The Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency helps to spur economic activity in the county. It is administered by the Tompkins County Area Development Agency and is governed by its own board. Four legislators sit on that board. Legislator James Dennis will continue as chair, with legislators Will Burbank and Martha Robertson continuing. Legislator Rich John, who is a lawyer with experience in business and as a municipal attorney, will fill the vacant seat. I'm also recommending that Mayor Savanti Myrick, whose term expired at the end of 2015, be reappointed to one of the at-large seats. The people expect we part-time Tompkins County legislators to work hard, and we do that. I fully expect that we commit more time and energy to the performance of our elected duties than do any county legislators in the region. It makes us a better, more cohesive body. We work as a team to get things done. We study issues seriously, strongly debate them, and then take action. We do know and recognize, however, that what is accomplished for the people of Tompkins County would not for a minute be possible but for the support, hard work, and advice of our county employees. From county administration to the 700-plus employees who work every day in so many capacities, each is a real hero for what is done for our people every single day. To them, we say thanks, and with their help, we will do our very best for everyone. Thank you.
Mike?
Yes. Martha.
I wonder if we could take the local law resolution. We have staff waiting for that.
I understand that.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
And yes, we have a couple of resolutions we have staff for. We have the TTP resolution. We probably should move to those. And then I will have a couple more comments. We'll come back to that. Let's go to the health, to the resolution out of Health and Human Services Committee regarding the budget amendment for creation of new budget adjustments. Peter Stein, would you move resolution F for us so we can get that one out of the way?
Sure. I move resolution F, authorization to accept funds, creation of positions and budget adjustment for vital access program called VAP. Mental Health Department pending, and it has been, in fact, represented by, passed by the budget.
Is there a second? Seconded by Anna Kellis. A discussion. Jim Dennis.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Peter, the Budget Committee looked at this resolution, and we suggested that Legislator Kiefer resolution would be the one that would get passed. Is that the one you're moving?
Yes, I would like to substitute that resolution.
That was in your packets, folks. So that's the one that's being moved, and that's being seconded by Anna, I assume. All right, ready to vote on this, or you want to talk some more about it? This is a pretty important thing. It's a big grant. It helps provide even better services in our mental health services department, and I think this is pretty exciting, the work that's been done there to bring this forward. Let's vote. Peter, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I'll just say a few words about this. I'm no expert in this, but I've seen that this whole business has been going on for several years about Medicare redesign, and there seems to be, as near as I can tell, a movement that the New York State government has done to somehow try to, at the same time, to increase the quality of the medical care we have and at the same time decrease the cost of it. And that's one of those things that people talk about a lot, and I think it's, in general, not easy to do both of those at the same time. But this is one example that sounds like it. Basically, what they're doing is there, New York is giving us a significant amount of money to do better that part of mental health where someone arrives in the mental health department with a problem and needs help, and to make sure that the mental health department is organized in such a way as to get that person to the right place in the shortest amount of time. And it's believed, and arguments are made that say that while that will cost money because it will require more people there, it will save more money than it costs because of the efficiency of the medical care that's being provided. So I think this is a good thing, and it's costing us nothing, and we certainly ought to pass it.
Anna?
Just one thing really quickly for people who might not understand the full scope of it, what I understood from the Health and Human Services Committee meeting, and I appreciated Director Frank Krupa bringing this up, was that it'll not only create the three positions, but the idea is that the efficiency will create an increased ability to see more clients, which will then ultimately create a business model that will be able to maintain those three positions post reception of the grant and completion of the grant. So I appreciated that that effort. Thank you.
Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Now let's go to economic development and take the resolutions there. Martha Robertson, would you move resolution A?
Yeah, thanks very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Resolution A, adoption of local law. What number would that be?
One
of, I guess so, 2016. A local law amending local law number 4 of 1989, the Tompkins County Hotel Room Occupancy Tax Law, amending the definition of a hotel in section 150-9 of the Tompkins County Code. I so move.
Is there a second, please? Anna Kellis. Discussion. Martha?
And I was anxious that we get this to the floor so that, because Tom Knipe is here as the tourism coordinator, and I had asked him a couple of questions, and you know, if he's able to talk to us for a second, that'd be great. About, in particular, about reaching out to a couple of business owners that might in particular be affected by this law.
Tom Knipe from the Planning Department, would you like to speak?
Martha, what's the question you wanted me to respond to?
Well, I knew that you'd heard from the president of the Bed and Breakfast Association, and also you, that you and I talked about the cabins and private campgrounds, that issue.
Sure. Well, let me start with the second one. The memo says that the change in the law changing building to facility in the language for the definition of a hotel would impact the glamping campsite as intended, would also impact probably private campgrounds that have cabins on them. There are three, possibly more, but three that we were able to find that we're aware of. And they were informed of the public hearing via email, and you know, if the law is modified, I'm sure finance will follow up, you know, to work with them on that. And regarding the first part of your question, forgive me, which was, I'm usually putting kids to bed at this time, so you forgive me.
The Bed and Breakfast Association.
Yes, I did hear from David Blake, who's on the was president of the B&B Association and also on STPB, and I thought that they were going to attend tonight, but they indicated support for this. I think, you know, they've been sending letters to the legislature and asking finance and to create a level playing field, and that's so we've one of the reasons, you know, for doing this is in part to respond to their request to doing that, for doing that.
Thanks very much. Appreciate your outreach.
Anyone else? Dooley?
Yes. I want to talk about the actual wording of the law, which I think is a huge improvement. But when I look at Section 2, this is on packet page 7, the definition said, but is not limited to, an apartment hotel, a motel, and I think it should say a guest house or a facility, so that they each have their own indefinite article. It's a grammatical thing.
Would that be friendly to
change.
The mover and seconder? That's
yes.
Friendly. Anything else, Dooley?
No.
Okay. Carol Chalk.
So I continue to feel that passing a local law and having to go back and, basically amend this as law is premature. This is not a matter that we've heard a great deal of interest in. We didn't have people come out to the hearing because it's probably, frankly, something that most people won't think about. And I think that the only time we're going to really hear about it and have people react to it are going to be during the very big weekends, college weekends. This in particular affects both parts of my district, that sees people being asked to provide housing for people coming for the Cornell graduation weekend in one neighborhood and for the Ithaca College graduation weekend in the other, who aren't prepared to register their properties as businesses, which in fact is what is required to comply with this. There aren't properties that would compete, that compete year round with the properties that are looking for the level playing field. And I think that we're not really going to know the impact for 5 or 6 years, as time progresses. So to take the step of actually putting this into law when it's something that we have handled as an administrative matter up until now, over the course of the implementation of this tax, the occupancy tax, we have changed the implementation several times. When it started, we defined those who needed to pay, the premises that needed to pay the occupancy tax at greater than 14 nights a year. I believe that's what the IRS calls it. Those of you who rent properties for more than that have to fill out more paperwork for the IRS. And while you still owe taxes, you don't have to register it as a separate business if it's fewer than that. In more recent years, we're doing more than we've said more than up to four, more than four nights a year. And I don't see any reason why we couldn't just try this out. And in 5 years, if there isn't any objection, if it's not creating any problems for the hundreds, if not thousands, of visitors who show up on campus the last weekend of May and needing a place to stay and haven't realized how tiny a town this is and county, and that we can't accommodate everybody, then we could revisit. But I don't see how it doesn't level the playing field to just say the paperwork that's required is we're going to apply it equally to everybody. So I would propose that we just handle this by changing this into a resolution establishing the current definition of a hotel in Tompkins County for purposes of the occupancy tax, and I would move that.
I'm not sure that's an order, Carol. A motion to change a local law to a resolution?
No, the resolution, we have a resolution number A on our agenda here, and I'm proposing that instead of going willy-nilly to willy-nilly is too strong a term because there has been thought put into this, but rather than pass this as a law, that we do it just as a resolution that would be our implementation, the current implementation of the definition. It's been handled out of our finance director's office, I think they were the ones who originally came to us and said we're having trouble figuring out exactly where to draw the line.
Yes, but Carol, what we have on the floor is a resolution to adopt a local law, and I think to go the direction you're looking for, that would have to be voted down and probably sent back to committee for a resolution to come forward again.
Do we have a... I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, but you're sitting in Jonathan's
Bill
seat.
Troy. So. Bill Troy.
Bill, thank you.
You're asking me now.
I'm asking you if it would be totally out of order. I mean, I don't know, it wouldn't... unless I get a second, it maybe doesn't make any sense to
I tend to
even
agree
discuss
with the
it.
Chair without benefit of great thought on this thing, because they really are rewriting what's here, and it probably should go right back through a committee process if you're going to take a big change like that and put it before the board. You're really reworking this.
Well, would I get a second if I proposed
I think
to,
it's out of order, Carol.
To substitute... another way of handling this? No. Okay, well, I'm going to vote against it because I think it's a mistake. It's not the right way to proceed. And I assume, am I correct in assuming that we would have to go to the state for permission to implement this in this fashion? We have to ask the state to change the law in their book?
You file your local law with the state just to let them know what you're doing, but it's your local law applying this. And as long as you're not inconsistent with any state law, you can do it. That's why if you look at page 8, it says New York State Department of State up in the top. You file a copy of your local law with the Secretary of State.
Okay. This is amending the law that we have on the books with the state,
you're amending
establishing
it, you're amending
the
it on your books, and you're advising the Secretary of State of what you're doing. Because otherwise the Secretary of State would have no idea what's happening in cities and counties around the state.
So when we originally passed the room tax law, occupancy tax law, we had to go and get permission from the state. It actually had to be passed on the floor of the legislature, as I understand it. And in the many years I spent on the tourism board, there was resistance to...
I believe the state gave local governments the option of adopting local laws like this. And then if you do, you go through this process you're going through here.
If I could say, Carol, you're right in what you remember. It took state legislation. Basically, what we did was increase the amount of the tax at that time and change how it was to be used. This is simply a law that is talking about that same tax and how it is administered.
So we don't have to go to the state for...
I don't believe we do. No.
Permission, and so it's just as easy if 4 or 5 years from now we're finding that it's not working to use this definition.
You could revise the local law.
And
I'm going to go to Martha, then Jim.
This is only revising a definition. This is not creating a new tax. It's not increasing or decreasing the level of tax. Sometimes we respond to things that our staff bring us. It's not necessarily that we don't do anything unless we hear from the public demanding a change, but staff came to us because, in fact, the ambiguity here was, and if Rick wants to add anything to this, I'd be happy to hear from him, but the ambiguity was really very difficult, and I think what you're suggesting, Carol, is adding ambiguity, and I think that's the whole point of doing this. And I think... It is simple. It is not complicated, and this is what was recommended with the county attorney and Tom and finance staff working together on it. So I don't think this is a big deal. We didn't hear anybody. I haven't heard from anybody, you know, by email or phone in any way. I think the only person who has a problem with this, I guess, is Carol.
And some of my constituents. Well, please.
Okay. Nobody's contacted me. I haven't heard any kind of outrage from Airbnb people or anybody else, which, frankly, I actually kind of thought we might. But this doesn't seem to be a problem.
Can we proceed to a vote on whether or not to adopt the local law? I'll call for a roll call, please.
Mr. Stein?
We're adopting the whether I means to adopt the local law, nay would be opposed to that. That was an aye?
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
No.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Leslie McBean Claiborne, how do you want to be recorded?
No.
Anyone else? Please announce the vote.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
That is adopted. Martha, would you move your other resolution, please?
Absolutely. Resolution B, and what was passed by committee is in the packet, resolution calling upon Congress to reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership TPP agreement.
Is there a second? Seconded by Will Burbank. Discussion. Julie Kiefer.
I would like to move my resolution as a substitute for Will's resolution. I believe, well, I
is
can't,
there a second to move to
it.
Substitute? Seconded by Anna Kellis. Go ahead, Dooley, you may speak to that.
Mike, I would be happy to make that friendly.
You want to make that friendly? Well, let's just vote on that. If you're friendly.
Can I do that since it came out of committee?
I think we ought to vote on the substitute, but you can say that you're in favor of it.
Okay. Point of order, I think if it's friendly, it's friendly.
Let's motion to substitute, but I'd prefer to have a vote on it. Can we just move to a vote? All those in favor of the substitute, please raise your hand. Those opposed? I have 2 opposed, I believe, Jim and Dave. Is that correct?
Yeah.
All right. That passes. So now the main motion is Dooley Kiefer's resolution. You want to speak to it, Dooley?
I tried to include some specifics, which is probably why some of the public speakers liked the language better. It gave real examples of what's happening, and I don't want to take more time. Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak to it? Martha?
Yeah, Dooley wasn't at our committee meeting, so we just looked at what the committee had in front of it. So when this came to us, but I appreciate the additional detail, especially because I expect this will go. Did we have down here that it should go to NYSAC and so it may go. I expect it will go to some places where people aren't as familiar as they might be in this community with the issues here. I guess I was also thinking, could we see the White House included in the last resolve? Was that okay?
Sure. I added NACO, but I didn't add the White House.
Julie, okay. We have a question of clarification here. Your revised resolution, is that the one we're dealing with
as the
substitute?
Yes, and is there something in my packet I should be mentioning, Kathy?
If everyone understands that it's the revised version, that's fine.
The one in your red folder.
Yeah, there were some typos in the one that got distributed first, but there is a revised version in your red packets.
I want to make sure we understand that. Jim Dennis.
Are we speaking about the resolution now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to vote no on this. And I've been in local government almost 24 years, and I'm always impressed when someone comes by and says that they're going to walk around a district and make sure that all the voters in that district did not will know how I voted and if I voted against what they were proposing. And the only thing I can say to that is if anyone wants to do that, the Board of Elections has everyone's addresses, their party registration, and they should do that. I think this law has been back and forth. The president has supported it. Tom Reed was against it. Now he seems to be for it. I Googled his name and TPP just this afternoon, and it's kind of up in the air about him. And I don't want to cast any aspersions toward anyone, but Tom Reed and I usually don't agree, and I'm pretty happy to be on the other side of him on this one. So I'm going to be voting no on this. And finally, the reason is I'm hoping as we move forward that we actually do the work of the county and do the kinds of things that we're hired to do and do them as well as we can. You know, there are people in the room here who would agree with me, I think, that we get these resolutions before us and almost no one cares about them except the people that bring them. And clearly they don't listen to us. At the state legislature, we pass them till we're blue in the face, and also at the federal level. So, you know, I want us to not do this quite as much as we're doing it now.
I've got Will. Then I've got Peter. I've got Mike. And I think I've got Carol next.
Well, Jim, I'm sorry to hear that you'll be voting against this, but I don't think this is inconsequential or irrelevant to what we do. What we have is democracy at the most basic level. It is literally one of the last forums where the public can come out and speak to legislatures, get 3 minutes to speak to all of us, talk about the issues of the day, and there's a huge disconnect between what's happening in everybody's normal lives and where these decisions are being made. The reason I brought something forward first was because we had Mr. Tiffany come speak to us multiple times and make us aware of an issue that has largely been ignored by the mass media. If you Google TPP, you'll find precious little reporting on it. I think the last article in the New York Times was in December. This, I believe, will have significant impact on us in ways that we don't fully comprehend. And I believe that because of the what I think has been a very negative impact of previous treaties passed in similar ways, most notably NAFTA. My understanding is that, and what is particularly unfortunate about this is that we don't have a mechanism to make this better. I think you know, there may be some elements in this that would be worth considering, but Congress does not have an ability to try to improve it. All they can do is vote up or down, and that process, my understanding, will be happening starting in early February. There'll be a prescribed period of days during which they have to act and then vote. And what we're doing by considering and hopefully passing this resolution is sending a message to our elected representatives at the higher level that there is serious concern about loss of sovereignty and control at the local level, the ability to pass regulations relative to health and safety and our own economic well-being. So I will be supportive of this, and I hope others are as well.
Peter Stein.
Yeah, I wish I didn't have to vote on this. I think it's unfortunate that when I'm in a position where I've tried hard to understand it and don't understand it sufficiently, that I can't just say I'm not taking a position. But our rules are that I must vote on it, and therefore I've made a decision that may well be wrong because, as I say, I'm not qualified to understand it. I've tried hard. I've read a number of articles over the past several months and find that it's very difficult. I'd like to speak about a couple of things that have been said. One thing, it was interesting to be the focus of Victor Tiffany's speech, but let me tell you, this idea that it's unconstitutional, I think, is laughable. There's a lot of things that you may think are not constitutional. You may think that in 1869 it was not constitutional for someone to say that no state had the right to not have slavery. But the Constitution did say that. That's what the Supreme Court said in what's known as the Dred Scott decision. You might also be surprised that as late as 1900, it turned out that no state
had any obligation to give education to black people, the same education to black people that they gave to white people. It was perfectly within the, even though the Constitution said with the 14th Amendment that there was essentially no difference between color, the citizenship of people within cut with having to do with their color, state institutions, colleges in the South in general did not allow black citizens to come and go to them. But the Constitution said that that was okay. Had nothing to do with that. And I don't know if you remember something called Citizens United, where it said that Congress had no right because of the precious First Amendment. The First Amendment said that that the federal government had no right to regulate the amount of money that was spent on elections. Those things were all constitutional. And I can't leave out my favorite one, which was that probably something like 1920, the Supreme Court decided that a 8-year-old girl could not be excluded from working in a sweatshop because excluding her from doing that deprived her of the right to negotiate for her own salary. That's what the Supreme Court said. It said you cannot have any child protection laws of that sort. So don't say what's obvious, what the Supreme Court says, because that's what the Constitution says. The Supreme Court has that job. Anyway, but why is it that this thing, I have such a difficult time? It's complicated. It's extremely complicated. And I do not think that I've seen the arguments made for and against, and I must say that I can't myself decide which one has the is better. I mean, the thing that concerns me a lot is this business about complaining about NAFTA. Because, you know, I represent Tompkins County, and I suppose if I think about international things, I represent America. But in fact, what NAFTA said is that you can take away some of the benefits from New York, from American workers and give them to Mexican workers, because that's a good thing to do. That to get rid of the tremendous, talking about inequality, the inequality between somebody that lives in Rwanda, an average Rwandan, and an average American, to look at how much the quality of their life. It's like nothing that's 100 times worse than the inequality that we talk about in this country. And essentially, practically the only path we have to change that situation is this free trade around the world. That the most number of people that the U.S. has taken out of poverty are the Chinese workers who benefited from those treaties and allowed them to take away our textiles and TVs and bring them into China, because that brought a nation that was full of poverty to a nation who was no longer that way. To me, that's an important moral issue, and I don't find it so easy to decide that it depends only on what's good for American workers. So I'll say that out loud, but I believe that strongly. So when I'm in that position and I have to vote on something and I have to decide which, by the way, the president says that's not right. The president says that, in fact, American workers will, in fact, profit from this. So he may be right, he may be wrong. But in something that I can't understand and I have to vote, I'm going to vote with what Barack Obama said. And so I'm going to vote for the TPP.
Mike Sigler.
Hi. I hate following Peter. So I do want to say that I am against TPP. I was also against fast-tracking this. And that's kind of, I want to start there, because the gentleman from Danby, I listened to pretty much everything he said, and I agree with most of what he says. I don't understand how Congress just kind of abandons what its job is.
I mean, I saw this happen with the Iran deal, too. I mean, it's really the same thing that happened there happened here, whereas Congress said, well, you negotiate this, and it's not a treaty. And it is a treaty. With that said, that's exactly why I'm having a lot of trouble with this, and I'm not going to vote for this. The president has that right to do treaties, and there's a reason he has that under his job description. It's hard. You got 13 countries, all with competing interests. Some of the interests are the same. You got these countries, and they're producing the same product, and you've got to negotiate that. I mean, a lot goes into this. But that's why I wouldn't have done the fast track, because, yes, Congress's job is to kind of review that and say, okay, what do we think of this? It's kind of like Tom Reed voted actually for the fast tracking, but has now stepped back and said, I don't support the deal. Okay, that I wish Congress was kind of doing that now, saying, okay, no, we're not for this deal. We're going to vote on it either up or down. But it's all topsy-turvy now. They've kind of reversed it. Now they have to reject it, and they've got to get, I think, a supermajority to do that. The problem I have with the resolution is based on that, but it also it makes a lot of economic assumptions that I don't necessarily agree with. I hear a lot of talk about NAFTA and how it was bad, and Peter just laid out some reasons that maybe NAFTA wasn't so bad. I mean, NPR, they did a pretty extensive takedown of NAFTA, whether it was good or bad. It's only 20 years. That sounds like a lot. It really isn't a lot. 20 years for a trade pact isn't. But it did increase trade between our three countries like threefold. It created a lot of jobs in Mexico so that, you know what, a lot of the people that live in Mexico are now staying in Mexico. I'm not saying that America didn't lose jobs. We definitely did. But we're now sharing jobs that didn't exist before, more high-tech jobs in automotives and things like that. So I'm not ready to rule that NAFTA has been all bad. They said it was basically a wash. I don't know if NPR is correct either, but it's certainly not something that I think we can base all of our decisions going forward on, whether it's good or bad. I mean, it's an opinion. It also is not lost on me that when we talk about trade deals, we don't seem to have a problem with the trade deals. And this is more of an overarching thing. We don't seem to have a problem with free trade when it comes to countries like Germany and Norway. But when it comes to developing nations, we definitely have more of an issue with that. And granted, we're worried about some of the controls, environmental, you know, workers' health and things like that more than we would in Germany because we know those are already in place. But it definitely seems like we have an imbalance there in our trade policy nationally when it comes to that. I mean, one last thing. It's something that Peter said, and again, it comes back to presidents having this right and having this responsibility. I mean, according to President Obama, he said this in the State of the Union, you know, it cuts taxes, 18,000 taxes on products made here in America, and supports more good jobs. With TPP, China doesn't set the rules in that region. We do. You want to show our strength in this century? Approve this agreement. Give us the tools to enforce it. I don't know if he's right. I don't believe he is, but he certainly believes he is. And, you know, that is his job as president to kind of make these kind of decisions. I just wish Congress had not given up its role to oversee this and to vote up or down whether they want this to go forward. Thanks.
All right. I just want to point out we do have a lot of other things to do tonight. I've got Carol, then Anna, then Martha on the list. Carol?
I don't think this is so complicated. We're talking about, and I think there are bipartisan reasons to question this agreement. It's not complicated to think about a corporate court that's going to be able to make decisions at a higher level than our national decisions. It's a corporate court that's going to say, it's fine to throw away decades of environmental protections, decades of worker protections. The issue with trade agreements has to do with the fact that dollars are allowed to cross borders and workers are not. Think about that. Yes, you can talk about creating parity between workers in Rwanda and workers in the United States, but if what you're going to do is bring the quality of life for workers down to the level that's permitted in some of the countries with the worst excesses, that's not good for the American people. If you're going to bring environmental standards down to the lowest common denominator, that's not good for our local communities. And that's the reason that this legislature voted, was it unanimously or very close to, very with a very high majority, to question the TPP at an earlier stage. And I'm not quite getting, why we're backtracking. If, in fact, there are clauses in the resolution that's on the floor that people have particular objections to that they didn't to our earlier resolution they voted for, I'm happy to move to take those out. I didn't really care which of the versions of these two resolutions came forward, because I think basically members of Congress are going to count how many, came in favor and how many opposed. So if those who have, changed their minds since the last time we've talked about this have particular reasons about this that you would make a difference to you, I'd be interested to hear about it. But in fact, I think that we do have bipartisan interest and local interest, statewide interest, and national interest in not supporting our president on this particular trade agreement.
Anna Kellis.
Thank you, Carol. That was very eloquent, and I want to second Carol's comments. I also feel that this is easier than it's being communicated in some respects. I understand the economics can be complicated in some ways, but looking at it outside of or around or in a larger picture around the economics, it doesn't feel that way to me. And so I do feel strongly we're elected officials and we're here to represent the rights and the quality of life of the people that elected us. And I do not feel that this would be in support of those rights or quality of life. And so it seems not prudent at this time to support it in any way. And I do not appreciate, and I find it offensive to push something, fast-track it, one, and two, the level of secrecy. If people really believe in this, then I want to see why, and I want to see what the details are, and the fact that it is held with such secrecy to me already raises a tremendous amount of red flags. So I also stand in great opposition to this.
Martha Robertson, let's move to a vote, please.
Just to quickly add that I think the issue is kind of who is, not that the president shouldn't negotiate. You can't negotiate with 535 members of Congress, on one side of the table. But the problem is that the only other people in the room apparently were corporate interests and not labor, not environmentalists, and non-environmental interests, not people concerned about public health. So I think the results are there, and I think I agree that what's most disturbing is the ability of the this investor-state dispute court to be able to trump pretty much whatever the rest of the, whatever local, state, or national government decides to do. And I just don't think that's a power we ought to just give away. And I think it matters who is at the table, and it is disturbing to, I think I share a lot of the values of the president, but I don't get this one. I really don't.
Agreed.
All right. So what we have on the floor is the revised resolution as substituted by Legislator Kiefer. Let's proceed to a vote. And remember,
sure.
I'm sorry, Dan?
I'd like to request a roll call vote, please.
Certainly, we can have a roll call vote. I want to just point out that...
Can I make sure? I think we had... I had a suggestion that the White House be in there and... Okay, thanks.
Just want to point out that this resolution is in opposition to the adoption by Congress of this or the implementation of this by the President and Congress. So a yes vote means you're opposed to the national effort, and if you vote no, then you are in favor of it. So let's go ahead with the roll call, please.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
No.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
No.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change her or his vote? Please announce the vote.
11 ayes, 3 noes.
That passes. Thank you. All right, let's go to, back up to the chair's report. I wanted to mention to everyone that the Bicentennial Commission did have a meeting last week. We've been doing things like we have a Bicentennial logo, which we'll be presenting to you, thanks to the efforts of a wonderful class and professor at TC3 who's helped us put that together, and we'll be showing that off fairly soon. Also, we are talking about historic markers, hopefully to be placed in each of our towns and city that will commemorate when they became a part of Tompkins County. You may have found in your box an old map of Tompkins County, which I put there. Back from the time when Hector was a part of Tompkins County, and so was, and Newfield, I'm sorry, yeah, Newfield was a little larger back then. Kind of fun to look at and to see when the different towns became a part of Tompkins County. So I just want to tell you that group is moving ahead. We're talking about some videos that we'd like to have, public service kind of videos, and we've been talking how best to approach those. Some of them would be, for example, having county employees talk about what they do and what it means to them to be a part of the county. I don't have chair's appointments tonight. I'll be making several appointments at our next meeting. Let's move to reports from our county administrator to start out with, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Mike. And at the end of my report, I want to yield a little time to Paula so she can explain where things are with our conversations with the Department of Justice. Before I get there, though, I just wanted to provide a little bit of additional information and agree with what was said on the Cargill situation earlier and how the community responded to that event. I have to tell you, I was absolutely impressed, not only with what was happening with the Cargill group, and their professionalism and preparation for that event was just incredibly good, but also how the community came to the support of that effort. I wanted you to know how broad the county's response was to it. So certainly we think about Lee Shurtleff and emergency response and how they respond to these situations, and indeed they did, and Lee was very much involved in assisting with the coordination of the response to the event, which was led by the Lansing Fire Department, who has trained for years with the Ithaca Fire Department to respond to this. So those were two of the lead agencies. But Lee and his group added a lot in the way of coordination and backup support. But beyond that, the Mental Health Department was involved. So we had two staff people and Frank Krupa, who were there for the families. There was a reception center set up, so we had counselors there to work with families as they awaited reunification with their family members. We had a member of the health department who was there to assist Marsha with the PIO function. Also someone, Jeff Dunn, from Solid Waste, was there to help with the PIO function. As you would expect, the sheriff's department was very involved in this, and Ken and Brian and Lieutenant Dan Donahue were there to assist with the command of the law enforcement response to the event. Several deputies were dispatched to assist. So a large showing from the Sheriff's Department and Sheriff's Office, and a response that was handled very well. We forget sometimes about the dispatchers who coordinated this incredible, incredibly complex communication function that had to exist to make sure that everything was coordinated. But the 911 center very much involved. And, of course, Marshall Lynch, who was the key PIO, the public information officer, in all of this. All I could think of was a bad 1940s movie where the person had multiple phones in their ears and talking and taking, and that was Marsha during that event. But it was extremely well handled. I thought our response was swift, it was precise, and it was very effective. So you should be really proud of the way the county stepped up, not to assert command, but to assist the effort that happened there. We learned some lessons in the experience, but we also applied some of the lessons that we've learned from prior events. And I think, again, the response went well, including the outreach to local public officials to let them know what the situation was and to involve them in that communication loop. So to everyone who was involved in it, really it was a job exceptionally well done. Much different topic. The governor released his budget last week. I've sent all of you NYSAC's summary response to it. I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes and give you some initial observations that we've been able to glean from that report, just kind of the highlights and the less than highlights that we've seen in there. It isn't like many prior state budgets where we were really alarmed with the extent of some of the things that were being proposed in the budget. It is relatively steady as you go, which is good news for counties. To pick up on something Mike said earlier, there's certainly nothing in there that says we're going to reduce property taxes by meaningful mandate relief. There's none of that in there. They haven't proposed to begin taking over Medicaid or any other mandate. On the other side of the coin, they haven't proposed adding to those mandates either, at least not significantly. There's some things that are concerning to us as we look over the horizon. We've heard about a hard cap on the local cost of Medicaid for the last couple of years. It's a good thing. If you remember, Medicaid used to be out of control. Then growth was slowed by a predictable rate of growth that was put on the local cost of Medicaid. And then growth stopped, and it was described as a hard cap on Medicaid. In this budget, virtually all counties remain protected by that hard cap. But in New York City, the cap has been lifted. And now there is a growth, a formula-based growth, that is on New York City's local Medicaid cost. And that's a city issue and a state issue, but it doesn't bode well for the strength of that hard cap. It's feeling a little situational. So that's one of the things that we're going to want to keep our eye on and make sure that folks in Albany are aware that that's a concern to us. And let's hope that doesn't happen in the other counties over time as the situation with the state's finances change. There's no growth in community college aid. And I think increasingly we need to let the state know that that is really a way to shift burden to counties and county property taxes. And it's impossible in an era where we're looking at a property tax cap, we hear in the next cycle of a 0.5% of an increase. So I think among the messages we need to give to the state is they need to do better with respect to providing aid for community colleges. There's a proposal in this budget for early voting. 12 days in advance of an election, the governor's proposed that people be allowed to vote. It could be as little as one polling place. It could be more based on population. That's perhaps a good thing on the public policy side, but there'll be a cost that goes along with that, and we need to understand what that is and identify whether the state plans to assist with that cost at all. There's more money in this budget for indigent defense. Unfortunately, it's only going to the five counties who were sued under that Hurl Herring lawsuit because they had inferior levels of quality in their indigent defense. So rather than to bring all counties up to a common and higher standard, it's laser focused on just those five counties. So again, among the things that we will want to talk about is helping everybody who has to provide this important service. There's a technical change in STAR that I won't get into tonight. It's the same thing that was proposed last year. You recall maybe that Jay Franklin had concerns with it. We'll be talking about some proposed changes in the STAR program and the way those benefits are extended. Highway and bridge aid looks to be flat. That's a good thing. However, over the past couple of years, there's been a supplement to that aid because of severe weather and the toll it takes on highways. The governor's budget, at least as we see it, doesn't have that $240,000 supplement to the county. So the governor can say it's flat, but again, in terms of year-to-year amounts, we will lose about $240,000. Hopefully the legislature will restore that. There's a new revenue source for us identified in the governor's budget, and that's expected revenue from the Tioga Casino. So if you look through the documents that have been circulated, the state is estimating that the casino will be open in time to provide the first payment to us and other counties in the region, and the governor's office, the budget office, projects that it will exceed $500,000. I don't think that will come in 2016. I think it'll come, if it does, in 2017. That's within their fiscal year, so they've included that in their report. There's a proposal, again, to raise the age of criminal responsibility from 16 to 18. I think in the past we've agreed that probably is public policy that makes sense. It would be spread over a couple of years. It would be phased in between 2018 and 2019. The state's estimated that it will cost $400 million statewide to make that happen, and the governor is committed to paying for that additional expense out of state dollars rather than local dollars. So as we have said in the past, we need to make sure that we hold the state to that commitment. And again, there's some competitive money in this budget. You've read about those in the headlines. Sometimes they're called the Hunger Games. There are more Hunger Games for airport aid, infrastructure aid, consolidation aid, and so forth. And just kind of in the footnotes of the budget and closing out all of this, there's a reference to the goal of providing every New Yorker access to high-speed broadband internet access by the end of 2018. And the budget, according to this footnote, includes $500 million to make sure that that happens. So we're going to want to know where that money is going and how we get some of it here, because we still have some dark spots in coverage in Tompkins County. And lastly, there's a reference to additional transit aid of $25 million in upstate for upstate transit. And again, we'll want to know how we can capture some of that money to bring back for TCAT. So in terms of our first rush of reviews of the budget, those are the things that we spotted as some of the high points and areas of concern, helping us to direct our lobbying efforts over the next several weeks. So that's again, quick view of the state budget. If there's no questions on that, I know Paula wants to update you on where we are with the DOJ.
Let's see if there are any questions. I see Martha's hand.
Thanks very much, Joe. The New York City lifting the cap on growth sure has the de Blasio name all over it, right, with that on the handle of the knife, right?
A little bit.
That's really disturbing. The highway and bridge aid, now that's not counting. That's the Marcoselli aid?
It is. It's CHIPS and Marcoselli aid, yeah.
But it's not counting the new infusion of capital money that he's talking about.
No.
Right. Okay.
That's correct.
Thanks.
Julie?
There used to be, in recent years, pretty much parity between money to downstate, to the MPA, the downstate transportation, and upstate. And this year, it's not equal. Downstate is getting more. So I'm hoping that NYSAC will be on top of that, and I think we need to talk to our representatives about that.
Agreed.
Okay. Shall we call up our Deputy County Administrator, Paula Younger?
Thanks, Mike. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Justice. As Mike mentioned, referenced briefly in his opening remarks this evening, last week I received written confirmation from the Department of Justice, specifically their community-oriented policing services area, that our request for an independent review of law enforcement actions taken during the Hornbrook Road incident has been approved. DOJ will be in contact with me shortly, but I would suspect it's probably going to take roughly about 60 days for them to be on the ground and hear actually on conducting their review. The COPS office will need to identify what they term a TA provider team. So that's going to be those groups of experts that know law enforcement, tactical operations, and so forth, to come together to put a plan together so that then they can begin their site visit activity. Also, as a part of that TA package, we will have a what they call a project site manager, and that person is actually a representative of the DOJ COPS office. So I realize that the long that it has been a long wait. Roughly, I think it's been about eight and a half months. But I hope that you feel that this is indeed good news. I think this is going to be an important opportunity for both our local law enforcement agencies as well as our local community. At the foundation of this TA request is that need to build trust and to nurture legitimacy in terms of the public being assured that our law enforcement acted appropriately and that procedurally they did so in a just way. And I think that that's the approach that DOJ is going to take. It will be totally independent, even though they have been provided all types of information related to the incident that was included in the after-action report. They've made it very clear to us that they're not putting a rubber stamp on anything. They're coming in with a fresh eye, as we have requested. So just a quick thanks to Sheriff Lansing and Deputy Sheriff Robeson, because as you might recall, we had to approach this twice. You remember back in May, we had submitted a request to the Bureau for Justice Assistance, and then they referred us to the COPS office, which their protocol required that the TA request not come from you as the legislature, but to come from our sheriff's office. I also want to acknowledge Chief Barber of the city for also cooperating and supporting this TA effort. And, of course, the county administrator, the chair of the legislature, and the town supervisor also signed a statement of support when we submitted this latest TA request to the COPS office. And then finally, to those that hung in there from the very beginning, and that would be Legislator Robertson and Legislator Dennis and one of our former legislators, Nathan Shinagawa. They were in it for the long haul, so thank you very much. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Questions? Paula, thank you. And certainly your efforts here were no small thing.
Thank you.
Joe, anything else?
That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Then let's go to a report from County Attorney. Tonight we have our Deputy County Attorney, Bill Troy, with us. Bill?
Keeping with honored tradition, I can report I have nothing to report from the County Attorney's Office. Jonathan is on a break somewhere skiing, he claims, out west. Where there's snow, I'm not sure.
All right. Any questions for Bill? Thank you, Bill. Let's go to the Finance Director, Rick Snyder.
I have no report for this evening either. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Any questions for Rick, I should ask? Before I go any further, I want to mention that after tonight's executive session, we need to have you hang around a little bit so that we can put together – are we going to do that before executive session? We've got to put the committee meeting schedule together. You have a draft in your – red folders that has been laid out by Kathy Covert and her staff, but we need to see if those dates are going to work for folks. So don't run right off after the meeting. Any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Will Burbank.
So I submitted one on TPP, which has now been passed.
So you're withdrawing resolution
I'm withdrawing mine.
H, I'm sorry, resolution G.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Let's go to consent agenda. There are no resolutions on the consent agenda. There are some appointments, and I'll read them. Out of the Health and Human Services Committee to the Community Mental Health Services Board, we have Carol Booth, John Bezerganian, and Jan Lynch. To the Mental Health Subcommittee, Christine Decker. To the Developmental Disabilities Subcommittee, Katrina Schickel, Jan Lynch, Christine Donovan, and Sheila McEnery. Out of the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, to the Water Resources Council, we have Cynthia Brock. Municipal recommendations to the Tompkins County Youth Services Board, Kathy Gehring from the town of Dryden, and to the Environmental Management Council, Stephen Patrick Bisson from the town of Dryden. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Julie Kiefer, seconded by Carol Chalk. Any discussion? All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous. It's now exactly 7:30. Let's take 10 minutes, and we'll come back, and we'll go down through the committee or the standing committee reports. Okay, let's get started again. We're going to start with Martha Robertson, who's the chair of the Economic Development Committee, for her report. You've done your resolutions.
All right, a report.
Don't have to have a report.
Let me think.
It's okay.
I don't think I have a report. We had our last meeting was mostly about the TPP and the hotel law, but the or the room tax law. So we met the second week of January, and I just want to thank the committee that was very engaged in this past year, and I think we had a lot of good discussions, and appreciate their work. And I look forward to wrestling a seven-member committee this year. So we'll see how that goes. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Questions for Martha? Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll be meeting 1 week from today on Tuesday the 26th at 3 o'clock here in Chambers. Got a lot of stuff on the agenda, including the annual county administrators' set of goals, sort of his work plan for the year, which is tied in with what the county is doing as a whole. It's definitely worth hearing or reading. And also we're going to be discussing this issue of how affordable housing is assessed. It's a kind of complex issue and pretty interesting and pretty important. So if you're interested in that topic, please show up.
Questions for Dan?
Wait,
Carol.
Tell the time and the place. And is this the new committee or the old committee at this point?
Mike, I'm going to defer to you on this. My understanding was it was the old committees, but...
We're going to have the planning committee tomorrow... The old planning committee. What's your pleasure on that? Do you have enough work for the old committee, or just
yes,
want to roll into the new one?
We have a good agenda, a good full
All
agenda.
Right, then go ahead and meet then.
And when's it again?
It's 1 week from today, Tuesday the 26th.
The old committee.
3 o'clock.
Will then meet.
All right.
3 o'clock. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Julie Kiefer is the chair.
Yes, well, as you just referenced, the old committee has a meeting scheduled tomorrow at 3 o'clock, and we are going to have the benefit of three presenters from the Department of Environmental Conservation dealing with the dueling presentations we have had on the legacy ash site at Cayuga operating. And we have one other item of business, so it'll mostly be devoted to the power plant situation.
Questions for Dooley? Dooley, I think you have some resolutions. Resolution
Yes.
C?
Yes, I do. Sorry. Resolution C. ID 6059, affirming the Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council recommendation to increase the ITCTC staff director's salary. And I move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Carol. Discussion?
There is just one manifest error in that on line 31. We're no longer the county board, we're the county legislature.
Good idea. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
And resolution D, ID 6064, authorizing a contract with the Tompkins County Soil and Water Conservation District to provide interim financial assistance to support the eradication of hydrilla in and around Cayuga Lake. You'll notice in the title I read the word conservation, which was missing. And I move that.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion, Martha?
Just a question of whether we know yet about city money going into this.
Between the time the resolution was drafted and now, I believe the city has acted to support and contribute money, but I'm not sure of the dollar amount.
I believe it's the same as it was last year, which was $100,000.
Thank you.
And there is a question of whether it is appropriate for us in line 30 to add the word and city, to repay the county and city as the reimbursements come in. I would be guided by Mike. What do you think?
I didn't hear that, Julie. I'm sorry.
We refer to how both the county and the city will be reimbursed by the Soil and Water Conservation District when it gets money from the state. We're fronting the money. And the contract that we will be signing presumably will say that both the county and the city will be reimbursed. But I wasn't sure whether we needed to add and city in our resolution on line 30.
Joe or Rick, are we okay with that?
I'm sure the city is going to say that in its legislation, that there's an obligation to repay it, so both parties would have similar language.
We have it in line 22, county and city, but we don't have it down in the resolution part.
Rick?
I think in looking at lines 28 and 29, it specifically addresses a contract between the county and the district and the amount of $200,000. So I think we may be clouding the issue there a little bit if we add the city in line 30, because this particular paragraph deals specifically with the county and the district. So I probably think not.
Thank you.
We're ready to vote. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Are there any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Dooley. Anything else?
No, thank you.
The Charter Review Committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. Is that right? No, we didn't meet. I take that back, because we meet right after the first legislature meeting. And we reviewed the public works sections. Basically, the scheme there is to make them into full departments, the different divisions of public works. And we met with the county administrator on that and at least one or two of the department heads. This was a revisit. We had talked with them previously. Any questions I can answer? Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis is the chair.
Thank you, Michael. I want to move right to the resolution. It is authorizing the extension of financial audit contract with Chosky, Dietershagen, Little, Mickelson, and Company, LLP, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion.
Let me just say that Rick Snyder negotiated with the audit company and managed to keep them at the same price for, I believe, the next 2 years. And that is a good thing for us. And they have done our audits for a good length of time, and They're very proficient and professional and do a great job for it. So I would hope everyone can support this.
Will Burbank.
Jim, I will support this, though it brought to my attention that some other entities have gone, that have formerly used them, have gone to other companies just based on price. And I'm just wondering if we...
Based on what?
Based on cost. And I'm just wondering whether we've done a comparative cost at any time soon. Or...
A couple of years ago, I think we did. And it came back to them, one, because of the quality of their work, and two, I'm not certain. I can't remember specifically what the costs were, but...
The last time they kept the cost the same when we did an RFP, and we normally would be doing that at this time because we've had them for 6 years. The driver behind this that stopped us from doing the RFP and going through the process was two things, really, and I kind of wove them into the resolution. There's two big GASB statements that's coming out. One of them has to do with pension fund accounting, and the other one has to do with a IDA issue. And we're implementing those with the help of this auditing firm. They show a remarkable expertise in these particular GASBs, and we wanted to keep them on while we go through this transition. The second main thing was that we're going through four senior-level staff changes over the next year. And I brought this to the legislative during the finance department's budget presentation this past fall. And in that presentation, I remarked that we would try to keep our same auditors when we're going through such a momentous time with four senior-level staff changes. And that was the main driver for keeping the continuity of the firm. At that point in time, we had some additional funding that was brought into the finance department budget as one of those additional things that we thought we were going to need. But over the last 60 days, I've been able to work with the auditing firm and the partners, and we've been able to contain the cost to the exact same level as what we've had them over the last 4 years. So I think it's been a six-year period in which they've had absolutely no cost increase whatsoever. So I was pretty thrilled to bring that back to the legislature after asking for more money during the budget process. It's going to be the same amount of $68,000.
Thank you.
Okay. Ready to vote on this one? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? That's unanimous.
Let me just one or two comments. I've met with the members of the committee, who are the same members that we've had in 2015, and we've established the time as presented on the draft standing committee's calendar of the fourth Monday at 4 p.m. Each month for the budget committee. And we'll start working on the budget in about 6 weeks. I have no report other than... I heard Mike loud and clear that I have to, and the committee has to evaluate the four directs, and that will get done. And secondly, the whole year has been quite good. The committee, it's a good group of people, and I'm very pleased that the same other four members are back with me again, and I think we'll do well. So. Thank you for that, Mike, and the members of the committee.
I just would point out that change is good sometimes, too. But in this case, I think we have a strong committee, and for another year, we'll do it that way.
I agree.
Old Library Committee has not met. Public Safety Committee, back to Jim Dennis, the vice chair.
I don't have anything. I was really happy to hear Paula's report on this is leftover Nate stuff, with the DOJ coming. The undersheriff is here. We'll talk about some other things in an executive session. But, you know, it's been an interesting time, and Peter will take it over. And there's some really tough things that we have to look at in 2016, I guess it is. And You know, I'm confident that we'll be in a good place. I have scheduled no meeting. The new chair of the committee may schedule a meeting. I think we have something that we have to do prior to the next LEDGE meeting before. Am I right, Michelle?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions for Jim? Dooley.
You said there's some really tough issues coming up. What were you referring to?
Well, the things that Mike talked about in his opening lines, the possible unification, the reentry program, those kinds of things. I mean, tough.
Hornbrook Road was the third one.
Yeah, you know, not tough specific things that we haven't thought about in a while, and going to take some focus on the part of members of the committee, all the members of the committee.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Let's go to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne is the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will continue to meet on the fourth Wednesday of the month at 3:30 in the afternoon. However, we do continue to work on rolling out some of the recommendations that came out of our climate survey. At this point, we have, Paula's stellar leadership has identified facilitators for the focus groups, which is one of the recommendations that came out of the committee. We just worked on the communication going out to all county employees, which you all should look for as well, for when those groups will occur and to encourage people to participate. So there's more information to come.
Questions for Leslie? Thank you, Leslie. That takes us to Health and Human Services Committee. Peter Stein is the chair.
I really have no report to make at this time.
All right. Questions for Peter? Thank you, Peter.
Mr. Chair, may I just add a quick something about HHS?
Sure.
The new configuration of HHS. Thank you very much, Peter, for your service on that committee. We will meet at the same time as indicated on the draft that came out, 3:30, first Thursday of the month.
Thank you, Russell. We go to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Dave McKenna is the chair.
Thank you, Mike. F&I did not meet this month due to lack of items for the agenda. The new committee will be meeting on the first Monday at 3:30 to 5:30. Versus the second Monday because a schedule conflict in another committee that I'm on. And thank you, everybody, for your cooperation. And that's my report.
Questions for David? Carol?
So, Dave, one of the things that we talked about a number of years ago was doing another look at our roads protection law. And not the law itself and the wording of the law, but the numbers that we used in it. And I think we may be overdue to look at that, what impact has it had, how many developers or projects are...
You're talking about the road use law?
The road, yes. What did I call it? Road use law, yes. That's the official name. So... I'd be interested in knowing if the committee, might take that up in this year, or if you'll put something on the agenda, just let us know when it might be.
Okay, I will do that.
That Jeff has talked about it being time to look at that as well.
Anything else for Dave? Thank you, David. Minutes of the previous meeting, January 5th. Someone want to move them? Peter, seconded by Anna. Discussion? Ready to vote? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Those opposed? We have one opposed. I'd like a motion to go into executive session to discuss labor negotiations and litigation. We will come back out of executive session, and we don't plan on taking any action at that point.
Move it.
Julie Kiefer is moving it, seconded by Glenn Morey. All in favor?
Wait, I have a question. So the question came up as to whether the committees that haven't had a chance during the break to see if
after the executive
time,
session,
whether,
we'll hang around a little
well,
bit.
Whether staff might want to be here for that in case there are
we
questions.
Can, I think we can just okay. tell the staff what if it's okay. We don't think we have to hold them. All right. All in favor of the executive session, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we're in executive session. We'll let them have a couple of minutes to clear the room and get the cameras turned off.